This podcast is kindly supported by Vodafone.
Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily podcast. Is the Tory party beginning to come together? We've seen Amber Rudd today say that she is, after all, prepared to reconcile herself to a no-deal Brexit. This is the same Amber Rudd who was leading attempts to quash that option only a few months ago. So is the Boris magic beginning to work? I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Now, Katie, Boris has already said that anybody who wants to work for him as Prime Minister, if he were to get that job, would have to be on board with no deal. So do we see Amber Rudd basically trying to save her job? And do we think she hasn't really changed her mind, she's just pretending to?
I think there are a few interpretations. Amber Rudd's supporters or allies are calling what she's done today a graceful pivot. So we've seen the Matt Hancock approach, which I think was more of a very drastic, tight-angled turn within hours of saying perhaps the opposite thing. With Amber Rudd, we've seen her basically say that her position has changed, but she is saying that it's clear the withdrawal agreement doesn't have a chance. It's been voted down 3 times in its current form. And actually, what's important is both of the candidates, and that's the person she's supporting still technically, Jeremy Hunt, and Boris Johnson, the person who we expect to win, have said that no deal is not their first priority. And she can get behind and serve in a government of any leader, so long as they are first priority trying to get a Brexit deal. If no deal is what happens, if they can't secure that deal, that's fine. Her problem would be if they were going for it as a priority. Now, there are a few clear things that this raises in terms of issues. The first is that, is this genuine? This doesn't feel too similar to the Amber Rudd who in a way broke collective responsibility and penned an op-ed along with some of her colleagues in the Daily Mail warning against no deal, talking about extending Article 50. It feels like this is a different version of Amber Rudd. Amber Rudd supporters would say, well, actually things have changed since then. But I think the question is, Boris Johnson has suggested that he just wants people to look at the situation around how it's changed and get on board. Amber Rudd appears to have done that. But there are Johnson allies who worry that giving her an important cabinet position, and there's some rumours that she could be even in line for a great office of state rather than keeping her current role as work and pension secretary, would put the government in a vulnerable place. Because she may say this now because she is hoping that Boris Johnson will get changes and there will be a deal. But if you actually got close to having to go for a no-deal Brexit, would she really be so enthusiastic about the prospect? Would she resign dramatically? Or would she use her position to speak to the Gawkward squad that we expect to form? David Gawk, David Liddington.
The Gawkward squad.
Yeah, this is the new
squad. How many members of the Gawkward squad are there?
Well, I think around 30, but some had counted Amber Rudd in that. So is she going to have private communications with that group? Perhaps she won't, but previous form has said that she does feel strongly.
Maybe she's a sleeper.
So I think it's exactly so. I think those are the concerns, but I do think that if you were taking exactly what Boris Johnson has said he wanted, on the surface at least, Amber Rudd appears to have hit that.
Now, James, in your excellent political column in this week's magazine, you say this is exactly what Boris is worried about. He's going to have people paying lip service to no deal right now, but when push comes to shove, they would get petrified and they would be destabilising the government at its most vulnerable point. So do you think Amber Rudd is a classic example of the kind of conversion that Boris Johnson will find unpersuasive, of the sort of person he would want outside of his tent rather than in it and able to destabilise it?
Well, there's no easy option for Boris Johnson here. You know, you are right that Boris Johnson has in private, talking to some of his closest confidants, says, well, what if all these people, they sign up to it because they don't think that no deal is going to happen, and then we get to October and we are actually going to the EU have refused to engage with us, so we are actually going to push on to no deal, and then they resign, and that destabilises the government at this most vulnerable moment in October. That is one fear. The counter case is this: if Boris Johnson is only going to let people serve in his government who genuinely believe heart and soul in his policy, it's not going to be a very broad-based government. And
would he even be able to fill a cabinet?
He would be able to fill a cabinet, but there would be another problem for him. Because in that scenario, I think the House of Commons would begin to vote against the government much earlier. Right. I think there's also another danger about Amber Rudd, which is this. Philip Hammond has taken upon itself to try and organise the anti-no-deal Tories.
Yeah, he's the new Oliver Letwin, isn't he?
Yeah. Philip Hammond, I don't think even his best friends would say, is overly endowed with emotional intelligence and organisational capability. Amber Rudd, by contrast, is very effective, as her machinations in the May cabinet showed, at getting people together. You know, there's a wonderful story about how the ministers who are most opposed to no deal, most in favour of a close economic relationship with Europe, Philip Hammond observed to someone that after Amber Rudd had to quit the government following the kind of whole Windrush scandal, he said, yeah, we all used to meet up for breakfast before cabinet to arrange things, and that just doesn't happen anymore because Amber's not there to organise it. And I think this is one of the elements that she is...
So the basic act of organising a breakfast was beyond the organisational capabilities of Hammond. Yeah. Well, that's no surprise, but there...
And Greg Clark.
But I think this is one of the dangers. And I mean, so Boris Johnson's... If he's going to have a cabinet of true believers, he probably will lose votes in the Commons sooner rather than later. I personally think his right approach would be this. They all need to publicly declare that they back leaving on October the 31st, come what may. He then shouldn't open windows into men's souls. He should be perfectly prepared to allow them to go home and think whatever private thoughts in their own heads that they think.
He probably doesn't believe it himself. Eh?
And I think he does, actually, to be fair to him. But... I think this is the point. I think he doesn't need to worry as much as he does about them resigning. Because once Amber Rudd has stared down the barrel of a camera and said, no, I am in favour of leaving on October 31st, come what may, it is quite hard to credibly resign on October the 21st saying, whatever mad person came up with the idea of leaving on October the 31st. So I think he would be better off... more joy in heaven over a sinner that repenteth and all that, basically welcoming these people into the fold and trying to run the government like that. It'd be better to have them in the tent pissing out rather than outside the tent pissing in.
Now, Katie, you've just come back from a lunch where the guest speaker was Liz Truss, the Chief Secretary of Treasury. What kind of mood was she in?
I think she was in a go-getting mood and perhaps getting a job in the Treasury that's more senior than her current one. And this is because when we talk about the Boris Johnson cabinet and we discuss Amber Rudd, and lots of people do think that she doesn't just want to keep her job, she'd like a promotion. But there's also, I suppose, the most coveted job is the role of Chancellor. Now, when it comes to that, there are three names that probably come up the most. Sajid Javid, we talked about that on Friday, seen as a favourite. There's also Matt Hancock, who's trying to get his elbow out to have a chance. And then there's Liz Truss. Now, Liz Truss was the first cabinet minister to publicly back Boris Johnson in his leadership campaign this time. She has she helped him with several of his policies. I don't think
And
she
was
times.
Perhaps the author of his sort of recent crackdown on sugar tax. That was Truss-esque language coming out of Boris's mouth then.
Exactly. And I think at times, perhaps, some of Boris Johnson's supporters wouldn't say it was always helpful to have her do this, because she was also being associated with the looking at helping those on 50k and high earners get tax breaks. Now, at today's lunch, she didn't just hint, really, that she'd like a job in number 11. She was quite blunt on it. And she made a few jokes, and it is custom during this lunch that you do crack a few jokes, but she spoke of Matt Hancock and said that she wouldn't ever feel threatened by someone with fewer than 5,000 Instagram followers. And as for Javid, she was asked by one hack who was better at maths out of her and Javid, and she pointed out the fact that she has a further maths A-level. So that was her comeback there. Now, then when she was talking about rumours that Jacob Rees-Mogg is in line to get her current job, so that's Chief Secretary of the Treasury, she said that Liam Byrne famously wrote that note saying there's no money left. Her note would say, I'm just down the corridor if you need help, because she expects to be Chancellor. Now, she did later play it down saying she wants to have a job that means that she has a role in shaping the economy and boosting the economy. So she doesn't have to be this. But in her whole pitch, she saw her quite clearly talking about the opportunities of Brexit, the fact that you could use it to kind of do these things right. She said we should be talking more about online opportunities rather than just online harms. She said that she wanted the UK to be able to set out its own rules and regulations in areas like financial services, technologies and free ports. And she also talked a lot about infrastructure, something we know that Boris Johnson is very keen on. And I think what was quite interesting was she was asked about this, tax breaks for high earners, this policy that's haunted Boris Johnson through a lot of his campaign. And when we interviewed him for The Spectator and he was asked about it, he wasn't really in the mood to talk about it. He said that he was surprised, though, that it had become a taboo topic. Now, Liz Truss said that she actually thought the reason that Boris Johnson has got a fair amount of flack for this is that her party haven't been making the right arguments for about 10 years on reducing taxes. So I think that she tried to pitch herself in a serious way, but it was also clear that she's not planning to dilute her brand in order to get this job. So I think that she is seen by some of Boris Johnson's supporters as a more risky choice for Chancellor because she is seen as a radical conservative. And I think today will have just confirmed that if they want to take a risk, she is there.
Now, James, Matt Hancock also would quite like that job, as would Sajid Javid. I'm not sure if Javid's come back from the Middle East yet, but if he has, he hasn't really raised his head above the parapet. But Matt Hancock was yesterday...
I did last night at the Tory Reform Group summer party, arrived just as Sajid Javid was leaving, and Matt Hancock was walking in, and we saw two of the would-be chancellors meet, and they went for the hug before Matt Hancock asked Sajid Javid why he was leaving before his speech. And he said, well, I'm leaving because you're about to start talking.
Well, Sanchez said that to Matt Hancock.
They both laughed, but I think that's where we are with the Chancellor rivalry.
I suspect Sajid wasn't joking. And Matt Hancock, James, has been rather mournful recently, saying that he's trying to be a Boris supporter and stay in the cabinet, which explains his rather agonised media appearances. Do we think poor Matt Hancock is sinking?
I think at the moment, the favourite for the number 11 job is Sajid Javid. I think Matt Hancock, though, is... I'm told that Boris Johnson is basically... It's worth remembering that kind of Boris Johnson hasn't had... Matt Hancock is an odd cabinet minister in that he's quite prepared to do things that lots of cabinet ministers would think were beneath them. And I'm told he is firing off at all times of day or night memos to Boris setting out detailed policy positions with a whole bunch of research and positioning.
He thinks Boris is checking his email at night.
Well, I'm told that there are, because of these hustings, there are lots of kind of late night car journeys where all these emails are being checked. So I think that there is a kind of, there is movement on that front. I think that there are lots of people around Boris Johnson who worry about having someone who is not aligned on, to go back to the earlier conversation, on, you know, Matt Hancock is signed up to October the 31st, but Matt Hancock, I would say, is more nervous of a no-deal Brexit than Sajid Javid is. That is something that will probably count in Sajid Javid's favour when this calculation comes home.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffeehouse Shots, on the iTunes Store. Also, you can sign up to our Spectator Radio channel where you get all of our various podcasts, a new one every day. And if you don't subscribe to the magazine, then why not give us a try? We've got a ridiculously good offer right now, where for £12 you get 3 months full access to the website, to the print magazine, to the apps and everything, for just £12, and you get a free £20 Amazon voucher, which means the net cost is -£8. So if you'd like to avail yourself of that offer, go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Cindy Yu, who produced the podcast.
Vodafone made Britain's first mobile phone call on New Year's Day 1985, sent the first text message in 1992, and are now bringing 5G to 19 towns and cities across the UK this year. For more information, head to spectator.co.uk/VodafoneUK.